This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Immigration is a hotly debated, highly politicized topic that's eliciting a wide variety of opinions and proposed solutions from pundits on both sides of the aisle. According to an open-ended survey conducted by Gallup in April, 27% of Americans named immigration as the most important problem facing the country. U.S. Gallup also noted that April was the third consecutive month that immigration remained the most salient issue for Americans who responded to that open-ended poll. So with the November election just a handful of months away, immigration is already all over the news, and conversations about the subject are bound to come up. But how do we engage in those discussions in a way that goes beyond party politics or talking points and recognizes the humanity of people, especially those seeking to make the U.S. their home? Joining us today to discuss this, we have Adriano Iudani. Adriano is an associate professor of political science and director of the Public Policy Administration Program at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Adriano, welcome back to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you always for having me.
And we're also joined by Uma Sehgal. Uma is a founders professor in the School of Social Work and co-editor of the book Immigration Worldwide, Policies, Practices, and Trends, and of Refugees Worldwide. Uma, welcome.
Thank you.
I'd also like to invite you to the conversation. Has immigration been a topic of concern in conversations you've been part of? If so, what are those concerns? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also send a tweet on X at STL On Air or email us at talk@stlpr.org. Uma, I'd like to begin with you. Now, conversations about immigration, obviously very heated, and they're heated depending on the year. So the narrative, it changes over time. In your experience, how unusual is it that folks on both sides of the aisle and in an election season are citing immigration as such a high priority issue?
I think over the years, it's always been a high priority issue, both for Democrats and for Republicans, because of the necessity of immigration for the labor force. And things have continued since the mid-60s, when the 1965 Immigration Act was passed, and nothing has really, no major act has been passed since then.
And 1965, I mean, that goes back far, but not that far. It's within a number of generations that we can recall. What was it about that time and what was happening then that was making it such a big issue in ways that it had not been before?
Well, immigration was first restricted in 1882 with the Chinese Exclusionary Act. And before that, anyone could come into the country at any time. Since then, restrictions specifically from Asia and from the global south was pretty significant. And over the years, it started opening up a little bit. But 1965, President Johnson felt that it was important to allow in skilled labor. And there was a great need for physicians, for engineers, for business people, as well as, to some extent, for less skilled labor. Mm-hmm. And so the thought was that there would be a movement of people from the global north to the U.S., but things didn't happen that way. And the global south and Asian countries really sent a lot of people in. And I think that started the ball rolling, and it was very difficult. It is not possible to go back.
Mm-hmm. Adriana, in the work that you do with Migrantes Unidos, we had you on the show last year, and we were talking about folks who are coming from a particular region of the country. So as you are of the globe, that is, and as you're hearing Uma talk about 1965 and the legacy of that, how is it related to whom we're seeing come into the country now and the kinds of talking points that are so big in political debate these days.
Sure. Going back to the 1960s, I always think that immigration and migration broadly is a special issue because it serves as almost like a mirror to who Americans think we are, who we should be, who belongs and who doesn't. And, you know, going back to 1965, thinking about the developments since then, you have this humanitarian act of just the freedom of movement, right? Of escaping violence in a world that has had environments degraded, governments unstable, right? There's like a lot of things that are going on in the world. And in all of that, you have people who are trying to move and escape violence. But with our work with Migrantes Unidos, you hear these stories about how their escape from violence and their efforts to seek safety have been criminalized. Mm-hmm. And that it really, I guess, contrasts from this narrative that migration has been constructed as the security issue, as this invasion, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's their efforts of trying to be human and to seek safety against this narrative of the security threat by the United States and also probably other places in the world.
Mm-hmm. If we think about how immigration is being talked about right now, Uma, you've been in St. Louis in this area for quite some time. Is the discourse that you are hearing, is it much different now than it was when you first arrived in St. Louis, I think in the early 80s? Has there been some development? Like, what is the narrative change that has occurred?
I think there's always been xenophobia, whether it's in the U.S. or any other country. We don't like people who look different from us, who think differently from us, and so on. I think in recent years, with political rhetoric and fears that are pretty much unfounded, such as immigrants taking jobs that are from native-born populations, I think it's okay to verbalize it more openly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the fear of the other has gone away. And to add to the humanitarian kind of issue that Adriano was speaking about, you know, it would be really interesting to have your listenership or your audience think about their own migration experiences, whether it's from another country or mm-hmm. from another region or from one end of St. Louis to the other end of St. Louis, and what motivated them.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the same motivators of most immigrants, to do better, to have a better quality of life, and the same fears and aspirations that you have moving from California to St. Louis are what immigrants experience in the long run, moving from outside the borders to within the borders.
Mm-hmm. So as we're thinking then about borders, we're thinking about national security. There are borders everywhere. Insofar as having a conversation that is more aligned with what people actually experience, apart from their status, is there anything, Adriano, especially in the classes that you've taught with students at UMSL, which is a very diverse student population, that are useful in getting people to think differently, specifically about borders?
Yeah, thank you for that. I think whenever I have a chance to teach immigration and global migration to undergrads and even graduate students, I think the first feeling I get in the room is confusion. There's just so many different factors. And I think immigration itself intersects with so many different things. I mean, I hope that immigration does get as much attention as it possibly can in the 2024 election. Whether it does, I'm not sure. But it does intersect with healthcare. It does intersect with housing. And I think that's where a lot of my students have questions about is, what can immigrants access in terms of healthcare, in terms of housing? And there's like a lot of rules that are built upon these public resources that, quite frankly, have been restricted from them because of this notion that they're not American or they're not American enough. They haven't proved their worthiness or their deservingness in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think whereas a lot of students and also generally the public have thought about the border as the border to the south of us. Trump's rhetoric about every town is a border town now, right? I think that really sustains this idea that people must remain vigilant and that their country is being under attack. So it's that sense of threat, mm-hmm. unfounded threat, I might add, that people are scared about and also probably uninformed about the kinds of immigrants and classes and types that are coming into the country.
Mm-hmm. In the 10 years or so that I've been in St. Louis, I've certainly noticed more immigrants and noticed them not only visually, but also, you know, hearing them. Uma, you mentioned rhetoric. You can ask a rhetorical question. It is meant, you know, to have some effect. But as far as rhetoric in the political sort of landscape or discourse goes, I mean, to put it bluntly, how much of the change in rhetoric is related to former President Donald Trump and the way that he talks about immigration or to the Republican Party more broadly, again, in this context of St. Louis?
Well, in St. Louis, the foreign-born population is actually much smaller than anywhere else in the country. We have only 4.8% of the population is foreign-born, as opposed to about 13-point-some percent in the rest of the country. I think that the reality is that visually, we identify those people who are not Caucasian, I mean, basically, mm-hmm. as being other. And I think that the rhetoric, President Trump's rhetoric has certainly exacerbated, increased the fear of foreign-born people. And the reality is that the literature has shown that the crime committed by the foreign-born is very low compared to the U.S.-born. And among those who are unauthorized, it's even lower because they're afraid of being found and sent back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the rhetoric has escalated the fear of the foreigner to such an extent that it's not...
There's sort of a dissonance between what
yes.
reality is
yes.
and then what people are imagining.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Adriano, one of the things you know that we've talked about here is unauthorized people. And even that as a term, I mean, essentially it's illegal immigration, right? Mm-hmm. And this is kind of what the problem is. Unauthorized immigration, migration as an issue. And we talked about official limbo, right? Can you talk about what that is again and what makes that sort of more complex in ways that people are sometimes not willing to like sit and think through?
Yeah, sure. Cecilia Menjivar is a wonderful sociologist that really talks about this idea of just living in a legal limbo in the sense that you don't know if you're going to be deported in the next hour or not, right? Your status, your presence in a country could be determined in a matter of just discretionary decisions that are taken out of your hand. And so feeling that you're sort of perpetually under fearful of just being expelled from the country rules over your behavior And so what we've seen is that that behavior fuels two things. One is oftentimes they will remain out of touch with the government and trying to get no sort of connection to anything that's related to government authorities for fear of being caught. But that fear also can propel and motivate political behavior and activism. And so that legal limbo on the brighter side of things has propelled a lot of asylum seekers to take action, mm-hmm. Whether it is resistance or whether it's trying to find information to make sure that their family and themselves are protected under the laws of the United States.
Mm-hmm. So, Uma, you also have looked at what the situation is like for those who are authorized, specifically for refugees who've come to the St. Louis region. And as far as the fear of other and how people understand who an other is, there's some work that you've done that pertains to Bosnians. Tell us a little bit about that and what their experience has been around movement.
Certainly. So we know that refugees fall into a very unique category in that they are outside their country of origin, and they're screened before they come to the U.S. very clearly and very closely. St. Louis has the largest Bosnian population outside of Bosnia, both by primary migration as well as from secondary migration. People from other parts of the U.S. have come. St. Louis is considered a very welcoming city, mostly because it's the cost of living is low, not because we are very warm and friendly and fuzzy. However, the Bosnians were welcomed pretty openly, especially into the Afton area, which was aging in place. What they had going for them specifically was that they came with more money than most refugees come, because many of them came via Germany. And they're also Caucasian. And so as they moved into the Afton area and bought up homes there, the native-born population was very excited about that, because the housing that was open was being taken over by these newcomers who had money and who looked like them. Within a couple of years, the long-term residents found that although the Bosnians are white and although the Bosnians have money, they're nothing like the native-born population. They're Muslim, they speak Bosnian, they congregate in large groups, they don't necessarily have the same appreciation for, the legal system in terms of doing things a certain way. They have their own way of doing things. And so there was quite a bit of conflict in that area. The political science department got some money to do some work in that Afton area. And we kind of spearheaded a project to get these two groups to talk with each other. And that was a long 3-year process to get beyond seeing that color of the skin isn't the only thing that either differentiates us or binds us.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great point to leave off. We're going to take a very quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue this conversation and pick up with that point too. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about immigration beyond talking points and just a topic with Adriano Iudani, Associate Professor of Political Science and Director of the Public Policy Administration Program at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and Uma Segal, Founders Professor in the School of Social Work at UMSL. So before the break, we were talking about who is perceived to be immigrants, who is an insider, who's an outsider. And I think it is it's important also to recognize that we're having this conversation about a hot topic, not necessarily because it's hot, but because it is important. The value, I think, of this conversation specific to St. Louis is that we've had a lot of discussion about how we need immigration in particular to help our population. And so there's this juxtaposition then of needing immigrants, and then there's also not wanting them. How is it different, Adriano, in St. Louis, maybe from the rest of the state or the Midwest in general? And then are there other distinctions? Like when we're talking about the St. Louis region, we're not just talking about urban, it's also suburban, exurban, and rural too. So how does that, how does this all work together?
Well, you know, the juxtaposition between needing immigrants and not wanting them, Denny Haskins, I think, is a Republican legislator that introduced a bill, I think, last month, where he essentially said that any undocumented immigrant that came into Missouri would be fined $10,000 if they were caught to be have unlawful status, and also would be put into custody. And so I just find it striking that in a state that has been losing population is committed to an ideological agenda of restricting immigrants, would be so bold to create these restrictions to welcome people that want to come here to work, to learn, to contribute to our local economies, and for them to develop such restrictive punitive measures against them. I think that that type of I think resolution or political act can be found in a lot of places where a lot of communities are feeling that their way of life are threatened, and that immigration has always been a tool to draw on those fears of people coming in that don't look like them, and that to sort of ramp up this need for security.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how much of a surprise, though, is that, given the rhetoric around immigration in Missouri? And that was State Senator Denny Haskins. So, I mean, is it a surprise, Uma?
I think it's not a surprise. But I keep going back to the fact that all countries, especially of the global north, that are seeing this influx of or needing people from the global south, this need and want, with the one hand we say stay out, and with the other hand we stay come in. And whether that's with the authorized, the legal population, or the non-authorized population, we need both groups, because we don't have the visa status to allow large enough numbers of people to come in under the low-skilled job or the entry-level jobs. St. Louis particularly is losing populations. And on one hand, we have several nonprofits or for-profit organizations trying to recruit immigrants to come in. But at the other hand, we have enough of the population that is very staunchly opposed to those who are not from the U.S. from coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this real misunderstanding that immigrants are taking jobs from the native-born population.
Mm-hmm.
Immigrants are taking jobs, both the authorized and the non-authorized, that are not wanted, that are not filled by the U.S.-born population. And that's a problem area that is not at all clear to the general population, both in St. Louis region and in the country.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as we close here in the last, you know, couple of minutes that we have, is empathy, I mean, is it really the solution? Is it like too touchy-feely? How far would empathy get us when it comes to conversations around immigration? Adriano?
I mean, I think empathy can move us in the right direction in the sense of understanding the difference between an asylum seeker and an undocumented immigrant, understanding that the way in which immigrants are categorized gives them a certain set of choices that they can make and not make, understanding that they have many different identities that are stripped before they reach the United States, that many of them are filmmakers, photographers, teachers, poets, and there's so many different stories that are taken away from them. But to understand that they want to have those here is the step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. And the last word from you, Uma?
I'll turn to Max Reich, the Swiss novelist who said, "We wanted workers, but we got people instead."
Mm.
And so the U.S., as many developed countries, wants people to come in and work, but doesn't want to deal with their cultures, their backgrounds, and everything they bring with them. And I think empathy recognizes that workers have lives. They are people with unique needs and contributions.
Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
This episode was produced by Roche Hemmings.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.